And joining me right now here on the phone line to go over the latest on the Jaguars, who, let's just say, wasn't pretty last night against Baltimore. This guy does a great job covering the team. He's my good friend Ryan Hacker Green with 1010XL. Ryan, how you doing today, buddy?
Mark, I'm good, man. How are you?
Well, I tried watching some of the game, and that was kind of a waste of time. I'm sorry I have to be kind of blunt with my comment here, but what happened last night there in Jacksonville?
Well, the same thing that has happened the last couple of weeks. It's bad football. I mean, it's hard to believe that 22 days ago, I guess, the Jaguars were 8-3, and for about a three-hour period had the number one seed in the AFC, and now here we are a little over 3 weeks after that, and there is serious concern as to whether the Jaguars will end up making the NFL playoffs. They lost to Cincinnati to a backup quarterback in Jake Browning at home. They go lose to Joe Flacco up in Cleveland. And last night, the defense played well, but the offense was just atrocious and a 23-7 loss to Baltimore. So it's not good right now. And add insult to injury, Trevor Lawrence is in the NFL concussion protocol, which puts his status for Tampa Bay on Sunday in some serious question.
Was there a certain play it happened, or what happened last night with the concussion?
We don't have specifics. It happened mid to late point of the fourth quarter. There's two or three plays that we think it may have happened on, but he finished the game, Mark. I mean, that's the interesting point. And then I wonder, you know, what the NFL will have to say about that. He didn't miss a play. I mean, he played the entire game, and then we go in for Doug Peterson's post-game press conference, and Peterson holds the press conference and says, oh, by the way, Trevor Lawrence is in concussion protocol. And we just did a huh moment. It was very interesting in that room. So we don't know the exact play, but we assume based on, you know, highlights and whatnot, that it happened mid to late point of the fourth quarter.
We're here with Ryan Green recapping the Jaguars' tough loss last night there against the Ravens. Are you more impressed with Baltimore or just disappointed with the Jaguars after last night?
I'm more impressed with Lamar Jackson. Baltimore better be counting their stars. They have Lamar Jackson. They don't have a whole lot else on offense. And now they're going to be without a couple of running backs. I know their rookie got hurt last night. He's going to be gone for the year. The Jaguars got after the Ravens offensive line, Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen. They got to Lamar Jackson. They couldn't get him on the ground. Lamar made some terrific plays. I like Baltimore, Mark. I still have some concerns, though, as to whether one man can lead a team to victory, because when I look at Kansas City, although not like they are in years past, but still pretty formidable, I certainly look at a Miami, I look at what a Buffalo is starting to do. I wonder if they have more talent than Baltimore, but Lamar Jackson's just playing out of his mind, and when he plays out of his mind, you see what he's capable of, like you saw last night.
What about the offense for Jacksonville? Just what's not working right now? Maybe that's the better question.
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, they got injuries, but everybody's got injuries. Yeah. I mean, Houston went into Tennessee on Sunday without C.J. Stroud, without Tank Dell, without Nico Collins, and they won a football game on the road. I mean, injuries are not an excuse. The Jaguars don't have Christian Kirk, but they did have Christian Kirk when they played Kansas City earlier in the year. They did not score an offensive touchdown. They did have Kirk when they played San Francisco earlier in the year. They did not score a touchdown. How's this stat for you, Mark? Three showcase home games this year. Three home games on that sideline I saw you in during training camp.
Yeah.
Up here at Everbank Stadium. Kansas City, San Francisco, and Baltimore. 12 quarters, the Jaguars scored one touchdown. And it was last night, Trevor Lawrence to Jamal Agnew. One touchdown in 12 quarters. Yeah, the offense has been a gigantic disappointment in a lot of games this year. The defense, like I said, played well enough to win last night. The offense just could not get anything going.
I'm looking at the stats right now. Travis Etienne, 10 carries, 31 yards. Hell, Lawrence led the team in rushing, 4 for 41. I mean, 25 for 43, 264, touchdown, no interceptions. How can it improve? Is that the $50,000 question? Like, what do you say, Ryan?
Yeah, that's the big question. Look, I'm never going to be confused for a head coach or an offensive coordinator. That's why those guys make the big bucks, and I have full confidence in Doug Peterson. Having said that, the Jacksonville Jaguars ran 60 offensive snaps against Baltimore. They called 47 pass plays, all right? 47. Now, they ended up with 17 rushes because Lawrence ran the ball four times when he had to scramble out of the pocket. But when you run 60 offensive plays and only 13 of those are called running plays, I mean, what are we doing? That's insane to me. So, you know what? And we did this on the postgame show last night. I do it with Leon Searcy, former Jaguar and former Dallas Cowboy head coach Dave Campo. That's not the first time we've had this conversation. It's like they get stuffed on a couple of running plays, Mark, and then they just take every running play in the playbook and just, you know, rough it up and throw it in the garbage can. They don't call any more running plays. They get away from the run way, way too quick. And it happened again last night, and it's becoming a trend, and it's becoming a problem.
What was your postgame show like?
Oh, people are upset. People are angry. And look, here's my thing, right? Here's what I don't understand. In this city, they are so sensitive. They, being some of the fans on social media, are so sensitive to any criticism of Trevor Lawrence. Any. It's as if you criticize Trevor, you also then obviously want him out of town. It is fair to criticize Trevor Lawrence after last night's performance. I mean, he fumbles the ball without being touched in the red zone in the first half. At the end of the first half, some of the worst clock management you'll ever see in a National Football League game that cost them a minimum of 3 points. I mean, it was bad last night. And you can't say anything negative about Trevor because then people will just say, oh, you want him out of here and you don't know what you're talking about and this, that, and the other. Here's my take on it. Jaguar fans have been so starved for their Mahomes, their Burrow, their Peyton Manning, their franchise guy. And they believe that they have one right now. I don't know. I mean, he's good. I certainly like him being here. I don't want him to go anywhere. But I don't think he's Patrick Mahomes, not even close. But you can't tell Jaguar fans that. And any criticism that goes his way, oh, my gosh, you are just the worst human being on the planet. A lot of sensitivity in my city when it comes to Trevor Lawrence today.
Well, you made the comment earlier in this conversation. Three big games, 12 quarters, one touchdown. That's all you need to know. You said it. I'm with you. It's okay if you're critical of Trevor Lawrence. I know you want him to play well, right? Moving forward. It's got to be better than that.
There's no doubt. It's not just Trevor. It's the entire offense. Is the offensive line any good? No. They've been struggling, and they've been injured. Yes, they are without some wide receivers due to injury. Yes, they have had some problems on the offense that do not revolve around Trevor Lawrence. But Trevor Lawrence has been the result of some of those problems as well. Everybody on the offense, everybody deserves some criticism, and that includes number 16.
Did you get any sleep last night?
Well, we're the flagship of the Jaguars, so we did a network post game, and then I do a show called The Fifth Quarter, so I was on from 1 a.m. to 3 a.m., so I got home about 3:30 this morning, was going to sleep a little bit, and you know, Marcus, when you do a radio show, you can't just come right home and go to bed, man. You got to unwind a little bit, so I think I finally got into bed about 4:15, was planning on sleeping until the late morning. My four-year-old had other plans. He woke me up about 7, but, I mean, when your four-year-old says, good morning, Daddy, I love you, how can you really argue with that? So I'm going on about 2.5 hours of rest, and I'll be looking forward to how I sound this evening when I hit the airwaves on my Monday show here in Jacksonville.
Dude, I'm sorry I have to tell you this. Your story put more effort into it than the Jaguars did last night. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was bad. And look, concussion protocol for Trevor, this is not a toughness issue now for Trevor Lawrence, right? We know how tough he is. He's proven that time and time again, coming back from the ankle and the knee. I mean, he's a tough dude, but this week has nothing to do with that. This is the NFL-sanctioned concussion protocol. He's got to pass it in the next 6 days to be able to play in Tampa in what is a huge game for both the Buccaneers and the Jaguars. I don't know a lot of quarterbacks that do pass it in 6 days. Some do. But I would think a majority of guys like C.J. Stroud yesterday with Houston end up missing a game in concussion protocol. So there's a chance that C.J. Beathard is going to start in Tampa in a must-win situation now with the Jaguars tied with Indy and Houston. Now, the Jaguars own the tiebreakers, but all three teams are 8-6, and the Jaguars are hanging on to this division lead by a very thin thread.
Are you in shock that it is a three-team race for this division right now with three games to go?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, obviously, before the year, you would have thought the Jaguars would run away with this thing. I got to tell you, I'm a big Gardner Minshew fan from his time here in Jacksonville. We used to have Flint Fridays on my show because Flint Minshew is Gardner's father, and we would have his dad on every Friday. I'm just a big fan of Minshew and his family, so I love the success he's experiencing in Indy, and they've won some really big games. And then C.J. Stroud and that young Texans team certainly playing above their head. The AFC South, coming into the year, people thought was a joke. It is three really good teams, three teams battling for that division title. And I got to be honest, even though, Mark, the Jaguars technically have the lead based on tiebreakers right now, it kind of feels like Jacksonville is chasing Houston and Indy, because if you look at all three right now and the way they're playing, you could definitely make the argument Jacksonville looks the worst out of all three.
I agree with you. We're here with Ryan Hacker Green with 1010XL up there in Jacksonville. I'm going to be completely honest with you. If I'm putting money, I think the Buccaneers are going to win this game on Sunday. What about you, as we're about 6 days out?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm picking Tampa to win. Again, especially if C.J. Beathard plays. The argument I made this morning, and Jaguar fans, again, they're in denial, Mark. I mean, you know, they talk about, oh, the next three games are the easier games. Baltimore was the hard game. Well, yeah, they play Carolina and they play Tennessee. On paper, those are easy. Tampa Bay is playing terrific football. And if you go down the roster, position by position, outside of Evan Ingram at tight end, where is Jacksonville as a position better than Tampa? I don't know if they are. If C.J. Beathard plays, I would certainly take Baker Mayfield. The Buccaneers, head and shoulders, have better wide receivers. Head and shoulders have a better offensive line. I would argue head and shoulders as a whole have a better front seven on defense. So, these Jaguar fans think Tampa's going to be an easy game. That's nonsense to me. I think Tampa, without Lawrence, will win. Maybe even with Lawrence, I would pick them. Can Jacksonville win? Of course. But it is certainly a big, big game, and I'm certainly leaning Tampa right now.
8-6, like you said, three-team race for the South. How many wins do you think it's going to take to win this division then with three games to go?
Well, it's complicated because Indianapolis cannot finish tied with Jacksonville because Jacksonville beat them twice. Indy has to be a game better. Houston, likewise, assuming Jacksonville beats Tennessee, has to be a game better because Jacksonville would have the tiebreaker over them. And what's complicated even more is Houston and Indy play each other week 18. This is the easiest way to sum it up. If Jacksonville goes 2-1 in their next three and finishes 10-7, that means from here on out, either Indy or Houston would have to win out. Jacksonville goes 2-1, that would require the Colts or the Texans to win out to win the division. I think that is the hope for Jacksonville. If Jacksonville wins all three, they will win the AFC South. If they win two, they have a good shot of winning the AFC South because, again, Houston and Indy play each other week 18. One of them will obviously lose that game.
All right, so if I look ahead, crystal ball, let's say you win the division, Ryan. You get the fourth seed. That's probably what's going to happen here. Fourth seed, then what? Host the Bengals again? What would happen in the playoffs? Because I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I agree. I don't think Jacksonville is going to make much noise in the playoffs. Having said that, you got to get in, right? I mean,
yes.
If you don't get in, there's not even a point of having the conversation. So you got to be in it to win it, as they say. I don't think Jacksonville would make noise. What I do find interesting, though, particularly in the AFC, is imagine this scenario. You know, you're Miami, you're Baltimore, you're Kansas City, you're fighting, you're battling, you're clawing for a top seed in the AFC, and your potential reward for that is going to be Buffalo or a very hot Cleveland or Cincinnati team.
Yes.
I think the AFC playoffs are going to be completely up for grabs. I can see a lot of teams winning it. I cannot see Jacksonville winning it. But again, you got to be in it to win it. And to me, the goal for Jacksonville now is just simply to get in and see what happens.
Do you have a favorite in the AFC right now?
Boy, I mean, if I closed my eyes, even though they're down, I would still probably lean Kansas City just because of Andy Reid's pedigree and Patrick Mahomes' pedigree in the postseason. I don't trust Miami. I think it'll be fascinating, Miami's next couple of games with Dallas, with Baltimore, and with Buffalo. We're going to learn a whole lot about the Miami Dolphins over the next 3 weeks. I like Baltimore, but if it's Baltimore and Kansas City in the AFC title game, how can you not pick Kansas City based on what they've done and Baltimore's lack of success in the postseason with Lamar Jackson? So as bad as they've been for their standards, I still lean Kansas City. But again, Mark, it's to me completely wide open.
See, this is my thing with the NFL. Dallas has been red hot and blown people out, and they just beat Philadelphia. You're like, all right, maybe the Cowboys are legit. And then Buffalo just embarrasses them yesterday. Embarrasses them. I have no idea who's going to win the Super Bowl, and I think that's what makes the NFL really exciting. What did you take out of Buffalo just killing the Cowboys yesterday?
I mean, and not only that, but winning in Arrowhead. You know, you look at that three-game slate, they lost to Philly in overtime to fall to 6-6 going into their bye. You think, all right, they're done. And then to come out and go to Arrowhead and win and then to destroy Dallas yesterday, kudos to Sean McDermott and Josh Allen and Buffalo. I can assure you, if you're Miami, if you're Baltimore, if you're Kansas City, you want the one seed, obviously, for the bye, but you want to avoid the two or the three seed at all costs because, again, you might see Buffalo in round one, which would be a horrible thing to do after you fight all season and have a really high seed in the playoffs.
Ryan Green, is San Francisco the team to beat in the NFC?
I don't see how they couldn't be based on what they've done as of late. Again, Philadelphia is very good. I think Detroit's very good, but they're not tested in the postseason, certainly. I like Dallas. I don't love Dallas. But to me, those are the four. I can't imagine anybody else other than those four. Seattle has fallen back down to earth. Minnesota's got problems. To me, it's all about Dallas, Detroit, Philly, and San Francisco. And, yeah, of those four, I don't know how you don't pick San Francisco in that equation.
Before I let you go, and I appreciate you coming on with me, we've not gotten a chance to talk about this. What was it like being on the air when you found out Florida State did not make the playoff?
That was something. You know, look, I got family that went to the University of Florida. I had season tickets in the south end zone at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium for a while. Although, as you know, Mark, now I'm an objective broadcast journalist. So I shoot you straight right down the middle. I thought the committee robbed Florida State. How you do not allow a Power 5 undefeated 13-0 team who had as good a resume as some of those other teams to get in, even with the Jordan Travis injury, to me was not fair. I don't blame Florida State fans' frustration on that. I think the committee, to me, did that because they know they'll never have to answer for it because next year you're going to a 12-team playoff. Mark, it'll never happen again. Under the format of a 12-team playoff, a Power 5 undefeated champion will literally never miss the playoff ever again. So the committee does not have to answer for it. In my opinion, if next year was still a 4-team playoff, Florida State would have had a much better chance to get in because the committee did not want to set that precedent. But because they set the precedent and now they can wash it away because it'll never happen again, it was easier for them to leave Florida State out. I think it sucks, and I also don't like the fact that you have two teams that are combined 25-1 in Miami at the Orange Bowl with Georgia and Florida State, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. Great game, two teams we cover, should be awesome, should be a celebration of college football, and nobody cares about that game, which is one of the downsides of having a college football playoff.
Who wins that game then?
Oh, boy, who cares about it more? I mean, you have opt-outs. You got people saying they're not playing. They're going to the NFL. You got transfer portal. By the way, another topic for another day. To have the transfer portal going on right now leading into bowl season is patently ridiculous. This would be the equivalent of starting NFL free agency during the NFL playoffs. It is insane that you have all these people transferring and all these teams playing bowl games when 20 guys are in the portal and no longer part of their team. But again, another conversation for another day. I'll pick Georgia to win, but I think it just comes down to who's more motivated to be there.
Who wins the national title then?
It just means more, right? I think Alabama is going to use the fuel of people saying they didn't belong in. Florida State should have had their spot. You could tell Michigan wasn't thrilled that Alabama's logo appeared on the screen there during that selection show. I think Alabama beats Michigan. I think Texas will beat Washington. I think Alabama will have a rematch against Texas for the national championship, and it's hard to beat a team twice in the same year, and for that reason, I'll take the Crimson Tide to knock off Texas to win a national title.
All right, transfer portal. Should there be a limit? Like, okay, if you transfer twice, that's it, you're done. Like, because I can't do this with Dylan Gabriel, where he's going to play for four teams in college. What's up with it? Like, what should we do, Ryan?
Yeah, that's one I don't like. Like, DJ Uiagalelei is going to play for three teams in 3 years. I think you transfer once, that's okay. Anything above that, you're doing things the transfer portal was not designed to do. But, yeah, when you have a guy playing for three teams in 3 years, or certainly four teams in 4 years, that's something to me that the NCAA needs to put guardrails on moving forward.
Yeah, maybe you're the problem. Maybe that's what this is. His name is Ryan Hacker Green with 1010X up there in Jacksonville. Thank you so much for coming on. Have a great day. All right, buddy?
Hey, Mark, you're the man. Anytime, pal.